Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode. Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode.
Our roles as filmmakers is to align our intent with our impact.
Yeah.
And we get to choose like little things of like, okay, like how loose do we want to be like with our intent? And if we achieve like a little bit of a different impact on our audience, is that okay?
Yeah.
And so, and like, how strict do we want to be? It's like, this is our intent and this is the impact that, we're going to have on people. So what I've learned about is like having, you know, a range of choices. So you want to know, it's like, is it initial idea? Is this first thought? Or are we exploring this idea? Is the visual going to be like symbolic or literal or abstract, realistic, hyperreals? Is it lean more into a genre, a style, or a trend? Or how do we blend those if we're having all three? So, you know, we're doing like noir in 90s hip hop with the first person drone flying through a bowling alley trend. How do those mesh, and how do we do that? Like, how do we do that visually to make all three of those elements work? And it's like, is it classic? Is it contemporary? Is it futuristic?
And for the audience, if none of those terms made sense to you, go do some YouTube research, because I literally, like, as you said, noir, 90s style, like first person going through a bowling alley, I know exactly what that looks like.
Yeah.
And that, no, you're absolutely right. It's a visual language.
Yeah. ASC members are extremely accessible. Like,
yeah.
And you can just reach out and Instagram them. You'd be like, hey, you want to grab a coffee? I'm new in town. I'd love to do this thing.
The power of the Instagram DM cannot be understated.
Exactly.
So the big question is this: how are creators like us, who aren't built for the 9-to-5, for the people who put their passion before them being comfortable, how do we turn that passion into a living that pays the bills and a life that we love? That is the question. This podcast will give you the answers. My name is Noah Mittman, and welcome to Conversations with Creators.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Creators. I am your host, Noah Mittman, and joining me today is a super awesome guy, JD Gonzalez. He's a director of photography. He teaches cinematography. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell everybody kind of how you got into cinematography, filmmaking, what kind of sparked that originally?
Sure. So I've been, you know, privileged enough to have a long history with filmmaking, and I actually went to an arts-focused high school, which...
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, it was great. So they had a film department, and I got in eighth grade and then all the way through high school. And I think it was like my sophomore year that I realized, like, this is definitely like what I want to do. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I fit this. Like, I like the creative side, and, you know, I like the technical side. I was really into, like, I built my own computer, and like, we were modding Xboxes at the time, and changing the software, and, like, probably, you know, a few less than legal things as a teenager, you know, putting that like 250 gigabyte hard drive into the Xbox, and modding like the Halo levels, and it just went with like the storytelling I was learning in school and the
music
I was using in school, and then that led me to film school, and then in Santa Fe at Santa Fe University of Art and Design, also known as College of Santa Fe. It was College of Santa Fe, switched over. Long story, they're bankrupt now, unfortunately.
Oh no.
Yeah. Long. That's a very long story. I'll take another hour long podcast.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But you know, I loved the art school. The private. It was a private art school, so I know that that was certainly a privilege that I had. And then went to after that worked in the industry in New Mexico for a couple of years as a locations PA, and then moved.
What year was that?
That was 2012.
Okay, so yeah, so New Mexico's been popping off for a while.
Yeah, we can go into that. The there was a time when New Mexico wasn't popping off, and the incentives were completely stripped away by their then governor. I think it was Susan something. It was, they stripped away everything because they didn't see how it was benefiting the communities and the smaller towns, and it immediately just tanked the entire film industry, which was just so much money, as you can see.
Yeah.
And once they saw that, after maybe a year and a half or two even, it was really ugly for a minute. They put them back in place, and they're there to stay because they know the economic impact it would have. So, and now you can see like Netflix.
Colorado needs to listen to that example.
Yeah. And I have some ideas on what Colorado can do, but yeah, they're smarter people than me on that topic.
Yeah.
After New Mexico, moved to Colorado, taught high school for 5 years. Industry. Yeah. So I was working on some, you know, random, really small commercial stuff on the side and teaching high school during the school year. And it was actually at the same high school that I went to.
That's cool.
I knew that, like, I really loved, I felt like I could make that education experience better for the students than what I had. And although, like, I appreciated it because on some level it's like, you know, someone just handed me a camera and I was like, that's it for me. Like that works. They gave me that freedom and they gave me some boundaries and that really worked. And I was like, oh, I could just, like, if I had the same amount of time with these students, then I could, you know, really impact them, like, with my knowledge that I have now post college and in the career. So I did that, and I would go out on productions, like, on weekends. It was like really long work weeks, and you have the class hour and a half every day, same students for 4 years, you really get to know them. And then I would go out on the weekends and help them with their productions. So I would kind of just be the adult in the room. So working with parents. So that's kind of like the client thing you're working with. Parents are basically the clients. And students, you're teaching them as you go along. So that just, it's just really natural for me. And so when I left the school, in the summers, I would come to New York and work, actually. So I did that a few times. Come out, shoot a feature, work on a feature as an electric, and then come back to Denver.
Constantly going, man. Yeah, that's a lot of, there's no downtime in the schedule there.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't stop, you know, even to this day, it's just been crazy. So 2018, left the school, moved out to New York, was in a long distance relationship with my now wife. And then moved back to Denver in 2019, and I was just totally lost. And, like, you know, it's like, great. Like, I, you know, was doing electric stuff in New York. This is what I know, like, this is what I'm good at. But, you know, it was so hard for me, to break in, like, fully and make, like, a full-time living here. And then, you know, I moved out here in June. You make all your network by August, and then, like, by winter, it's like things are drying up anyway. People are already in those grooves, so the work wasn't coming in fast enough. And I never had the mindset of, like, you know, I'm gonna go work at a, you know, I should, but I'm gonna go, like, you know, I'm going to go work at a coffee shop right now and make that extra money so that I can be here right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of like, yeah, I want to do this, and I want to do this creatively. And I don't think that this is even the path for me. And so that's really confusing.
Yeah.
So when I came back to Denver, I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to make that happen here. Like, I came back and, you know, I was still paying rent on my place in New York, and moved in with my parents, and I was, you know, still in my relationship, of course. And I was in, it was January, it was winter, nothing was happening. And I just figured, like, what can I do right now? And I had a computer, a like plastic table, like fold up table in my, my parents' living room. And then I was just like, all right, I just need to make one thing.
Yeah.
And that'll get me going. And so basically just formed an LLC. It was free, and, or like maybe it was $10 or something. And then, and then
they're surprisingly cheap.
Yeah. And then I ended up paying, having a client, let's see, did a video for a client that ended up costing like $300, but it was like a 3-minute like political video. And it was, you know, extensive work. And it's kind of like a mini documentary, basically, like a branded film following a protest, doing interviews. And it was one of those things that just like, it was all I needed to get started to show that I have, you know, proof that I can do this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I did make a music video in 2018 that was also like, love that video. It's from
interesting. So you really started off working on bigger, like, you know, doing bigger stuff that you were a part of, but not actually putting your own stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I personally think that's really important. It's, you know, it's good to be on these big sets and see and work as a production assistant and assistant, just so you can see and understand the workflow and understand what that is like. It's kind of like you can't, you know, make like, you can't break the rules until you know them, you know, and so it's kind of like, if you're just jumping straight into an indie market, you might not know what rules like the films are breaking that could easily be resolved. And it's like, do we really need to be changing the system that works? And unions and these larger shows have that dialed in. It's like, these are very specific rules of like what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
And that's super nice. Like as a job and a paycheck, like, and you know, people love it. Of course, it's like, it is creative. Like every role has its creative elements to it. And it's one of those things that I, when I was in New Mexico, I felt like there was a like a bit of a glass ceiling on where you could end up with creativity. Mm-hmm. So you get to be a gaffer, which is great. Like, love gaffers. If that's the route you're going and you want to work big Hollywood, like, yeah, New Mexico is an excellent, incredible place for that. But if you're working above the line, doing producing, director of photography, director, that's like all those things are mostly going to come from New York and LA. So. Yeah. So those,
that seems to be pretty universal across the board with, the bigger stuff that I've worked on is they always, you know, the above the line people are always not from in town.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's reason for that, but it has nothing to do with like the talent that is in Denver. 'Cause there's tons of amazing talent there.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, people, you know, people who know people.
And it's what they're comfortable with. It's, I mean, that's, it's the entire industry is friends hire friends. That's really, really how it works.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. And, you know, I've learned more and more that just getting intros and just, you know, being introduced to people and not like having cold emailing people is the best way to do it. You want to find some people who really trust you, you know, give them your loyalty and then they'll show that loyalty back to you and like, and so on. Like, you just like really play it straight. Like, you know, don't try to cut any corners and
do a good job. And good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course. Enjoy yourself too. You know, it doesn't have to be stressful.
How, what are your favorite ways to network with creatives and like find those people?
So I go to a lot of events. I mean, particularly here. Okay. So I've done it two ways. I guess I've done it like three ways. So when I moved to, okay. So when I was, coming out of school in New Mexico, it was just based off an internship who like, and I had, a great, boss who introduced me to some people. And then when I came to, when I went to New York the first time around, I leaned on my friends who I had gone to college with, and they brought me onto their sets and said, like, yeah, we trust you, we know you know what you're doing. And and then that's how I met some more people, and then, you know, like, so that's another way, but that doesn't spread very well. Right. And then when I was back in Denver, and I think this is, you know, when I moved back to Denver from New York, the biggest strength, the strongest way of networking was just doing the short free stuff and growing with people. And so now I have, you know, these beautiful, wonderful people like Orion Madsen and, Ian Marks. Orion Madsen's an assistant, camera assistant. Ian Marks is an editor who I've been working with for years now, and he's phenomenal. He works, is Ray Dalacros, who, I mean, he's just crushing it. We did all of these, early films, and, Sean Andres, and yeah, the list goes on. I could just, yeah. We would just, you know, do these little projects together and talk together. And it was like just how we bonded, you know, and yeah. Like by making things and struggling with it and struggling like our way, like into the industry and giving each other like little tips, like, yeah, working with this place was like this, like, you know, Orion would straight up tell me, he's like, yeah, you might want to look at how this other DP does that. Like, cause I think this, you know, this could be a little bit better. And it's like, oh, that's great.
Feedback is so good.
Exactly. And that's one of the hardest things to get too, is feedback in general. And I really wish that were just a more common ask from people, is like, is feedback, but also just a more more of a standardization for the film process in general. Just like, yeah, like, what can we improve on? What can we, you know, what can we change? And what is absolutely perfect? Like, yeah. What are we loving and working on? Because we really get into our own heads a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally, so. Yes. As I think that's creatives in general.
Yeah. So there was that. And then now that I'm back out of New York, I'm going to networking events. And that's my number one thing I go to. I'm part of a Facebook group, Cinematography Salon. They have events out here. It's Variable, which is a mental health awareness filmmaking group.
Oh, nice.
They have events here. You know, I think that the downside is that they're all focused like around drinking, and I just there's panels and things, of course, as well. But you know, I want these things to be a little more casual. So that's one of my goals out here, is to really set it like, yeah, why don't we just all go play pool or something?
Yeah.
I'm definitely.
No, like, activities. I started up, and I need to actually get back to it, but doing a industry poker game where you're just hanging out. Like, it's because we, you know, it's nice to have the networking events where like everybody's chatting and you meet like 20 people, but it's also nice to just like, hey, who's into like these activities? And we happen to also be in the film industry, and like, that's, I don't know, it's a little bit more fun.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely helps, and it makes the conversation so much easier and natural, and like helps you really understand.
It's not forced. It's like, oh, we actually like this other thing too, and then we can chat film while we do it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's naturally, like, when you have these events that are planned around like a filmmaking thing, like it can be a little like, it's not competitive isn't the right word, but I think there is like an eagerness, like, people to like, you know, put their best selves forward and just, you know,
do the business card stab to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really one of those things like, I just want you to like, just be chill and be yourself and have an opinion on things. And I think I think it hurts to not have an opinion on anything. I mean, you don't need to jump into politics, but I think that, you know, if you're not going to tell me like exactly how you feel about something, then I'm not really getting to know you, you know? And maybe that works like for some relationships, but personally, that's not me. I like people who are like transparent and honest, and I want to know that, you know, what part of career you're in and where, like, and but also just who you are and what you like tell me about your Dungeons and Dragons weekly thing, you know.
Yeah.
You hear about that, and I want to know what about it excites you, because you know, that's cool. That's really cool.
It's funny too, because I've been to both filmmaking networking events and like entrepreneur networking events.
Mm-hmm.
And the classic questions, the entrepreneurs is, you know, what do you do? And that's the worst. And then for filmmaking, the similar one to that is, what have you worked on recently?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you working on?
What are you working on? Like, you working on? God, dude. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like every person at the event, right, is saying something like that. So
we agree that doing networking around shared interests outside of film is a nice way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to say that that's, you know, not. You know, people love to dive in. They love to like go to films, and they love to get into the technical and,
oh yeah.
And of course, like I love all of that too. But yeah, it's just like where like you're building it, like you would build a friendship, and don't treat it like anything else. It is really,
right. That's what it has to be.
Yeah. And I think one of the best tips, like I've kind of kept like done this myself as best that I can, is really like, as much as you want to like work with people and reach out and work with them, it's really about like, you should know that people who are doing really well probably have a large network themselves already. Yeah. And it's really difficult to hire new people into your circle. That's something I try to change with my production company. I try to shift that up. We can get into that in a bit, but it's hard. It's really difficult because you like, it's hard to break into someone else's circle because they don't know your experience. They don't know how to work with you. It can make communication more difficult. And it's nothing that's like against you or your self-worth. It's just like a fact of the game.
Yeah. You get comfortable with the people that you know, and it's hard, but it's so true. They're just like trying to get more, you know, camera operating or AC jobs. Like, you know, there's the people and they like working with their, you know, two people, and
yeah.
Getting into that is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with the larger market in New York, it's a little easier to switch around and whatnot. You know, I will say that like, it's really important to find those people who are at your level, which starts with you being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Like what level that you are at, and knowing like, okay, like I'm a beginner. I don't know anything about cinematography, or I just came out of school.
Right.
I don't have much set experience. I don't have, you know, I'm like my actual professional set experience where people are getting paid. I don't understand what the hours of the day are. Like, I don't know how to fill out a timesheet.
Right.
And understanding like, these are the things that's like you can work on that, and you can work on that with other people. And so find other people who have those, you know, similar experiences, and grow with them. It's like an elevator, you know, it's not a ladder where, you know, you're climbing right behind someone. It really is an elevator. You know, as they say, like, the, you know, all tides raise all ships.
Rising tides raise all ships. Yeah, no, it's 100%. Well, and that was an interesting thing, like, especially going out for, you know, some PA work on bigger commercials and TV shows and stuff. I realized that, I need to know a hell of a lot more about light and power and all that stuff to actually DP. Whereas I'm very comfortable and I feel comfortable going out for camera operation gigs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a big difference. Like, you know, I call myself a DP before because it, you know, sounds good for my own personal stuff. And then you go out to an actual set and I'm like, oh, I'm definitely not that level yet, but I'll happily, you know, press record and change camera settings.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to deter anyone from doing that path either.
No, and it's not a bad thing. It just requires more education, which is fine.
Yeah. Which, you know, and again, we'll talk about crafting the image in a minute, but these are the kinds of tips and things that I'm talking through with people at this workshop.
That's great.
We're talking about like, what are the different paths for getting in there? Realistically, what is it? What does it mean to run a commercial, a documentary, a experimental, or you know, narrative feature, an indie feature, union route? And what does it mean to jump into different positions, like as a DP or as, you know, in camera department? Which I'm pretty specific to camera department, which I'll come back to. And that's really just about you know, the more you can understand like where you like what industry and what path you want to take, like the better information you're going to get back from people and how to approach it. If you say, I want to be a DP, and you know, how do I do that? And it's like, okay, that is a really complicated
question. Exactly. I mean, just for all the reasons you mentioned, like there's so many different styles of DP and what, you know, what are you good at? What kind of projects do you want to be doing? Is there a specialty that, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point. I love that. There's like, what are you good at versus what do you want to be doing?
Right.
And that is something that you constantly have to keep in mind. It's like, if you're really good at shooting action scenes, but you want to get into like slow dramatic narrative films,
right,
and your whole, you know, reel and everything you've shot is action, like you're not going to get those other like slow dramatic narratives or those more cerebral narratives, you know. It's
well, and I feel like that speaks to as well exactly how you started with networking, with like working on just doing like spec stuff or, you know, free stuff that you were excited in to get more experience in exactly, you know, in what you want to be getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Is to try it out and learn from people, you know. It's the whole like surrounding yourself with people that are better than you, because that's how you learn and that's how you get better.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I've called myself a DP for a while. I don't know that I believed it when I first started calling myself that. And it's again surrounding yourself with people who are really good at what they do, which right. With Orion Madsen, there's a reason I keep coming back to him. It's because he is an incredible first AC and gimbal operator. Like he really knows what he's doing. He's you know, professional on time. Like I can ask him to just, you know, do this and I don't need to go through any technical know-how in telling him to do that. I don't need to know it. It's like, I can fully trust that he is, you know, the best person for that job. And he's not trying to be a DP. He is a first AC, you know. It's harder when someone is trying to be, it's not true. It's not. Well, when someone is trying to be a DP, there is a reality that one day they're not going to be an AC. So as you're growing that relationship, if I have a big job and I want an AC that, you know, I can take on to the next one, and someone tells me like, yeah, they're going a DP route or they're moving to another state soon. It's like, well, it's really hard for me to hire you. And, you know, because I want that, like, you know, that long-term working relationship on that. And that's because I want like, and, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not going to help you be a DP or,
right,
or whatever. It's just, it's harder to, you know, to know that like, this is something that I can fully like commit to in the long term. And
well, and I think what you said earlier with it's less of a ladder, more of a elevator of like, that's what I really realized when I started PAing more for bigger productions. It was like, oh, there are like career PAs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that. So I need to, you know, because it's not like, oh, cool, you pay out this, but like, let's try you out as an AC on the next one. I'm like, that's not how it works. You really got to choose. Which is also part of why it's hard to break in, because it's like, how do you get hired on the stuff that you want to be hired for when, you know, you don't have the professional history besides the stuff you've made to show?
Yeah. It's a chicken and the egg problem. Right?
Yeah, totally.
I think that, it's, you know, as you said, like there are career PAs out there, and that's not a problem. Like,
no, that's, again, if you like it, you like that route, like there's not, that just wasn't for me.
Right. And exactly. And we need to like start thinking of these roles as less as like, you know, steps to get up and more as specialties. Like this is like an AC, a second AC, like that, those are real specialties.
Oh, yeah.
Camera operator is.
Oh, no. I honestly, I would say the AC is more of, it's so much more technical than operating. Because operating, if you have an AC, they'll just hand you a finished camera and you do your thing. Mm-hmm. AC, you got to build that camera. You got to do, I mean, there's so much involved. You have to have AC equipment. There's, you know, it's really, it is, it's a whole career in itself, and they're very skilled and technical people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, I think that's just something I've come to appreciate more and more. And it's really hard. I would say one of the hardest things that, for me in my career path has been just letting go and taking off hats and fully trusting the people to do the job that they're hired to do. And I, you know, that's something like, I don't want to micromanage people. I'm not interested in that. It's like, I want to fully focus on the frame, the image, for the sake of the story. And I want to focus on the movement, like for the sake of the story. Like, that's like, we are the visual storytellers, and, you know, and the, you know, of course we're the leaders of the crew, and we should know the technical, but you know, there's, I should not, you know, be messing with menu systems that I've never seen before. You know, that's
no, exactly. And that was, I mean, it's funny too, because like when something, from what I experienced, because I've been in AC on a couple of TV shows, like really when something goes wrong with the camera on set, like that's the AC's job. That's not the operator's job, which is wild, because you're like, oh shit, like, okay. And there's a lot involved. Actually, so you just brought up something that leads perfectly into my next question with your focus on the frame. So how do you approach storytelling in your cinematography work?
Oh, yeah.
That's a big question.
Yeah, it is. It's in every aspect of my work. I, you know, not every shoot I can do like has like a storytelling aspect to it, but you know, it's the hardest shoots I'm on are the ones that don't have story. And it's like, well, that means I have to like, you know, create one as we're sitting here. So if I'm walking onto a set without any information and, you know, like a little scene that we need to shoot, or if it's like a branded doc and it's like, okay, there's someone at their computer here and, you know, it's me and a producer, and the producer doesn't have an idea of what shots you're going to get. You'll run into this all the time. It's
And there's never a shot list when it's just a, you know,
we've all done it. And, and it's, the immediate thing is like, okay, like, that first thing you ask producer is like, yeah, how long is this video? Like, how long do you need? And it's like, okay, of coverage you need, and then you turn that into like, all right, like, we're, how are we going to tell this story and how can we make it the most interesting? Is this like a really dark part of the story? Like, are we, you know, like, can I play with like slow push-ins, like onto the like, is it a thinking piece, or is it just, you know, if it's just them working at a desk, that's pretty boring. It's like how can we make that more interesting then? Is it about all of the other people who are working too, and the fact that they work on their own? That's the story.
It just sounds like questions. So it's, you know, knowing which questions to ask. And that's the same for like, you know, even, you know, when I show up as a one man band to a, you know, a local restaurant client, I'm like, okay, exactly this, like, where's this living, what are we trying to do here? And once you understand the parameters of what they're looking for, then you can start to kind of build something out.
Right. So I have actually created a system use for the story, which this is part of the crafting the image, which we haven't even explained what.
Yeah, that. We're gonna get that into that. literally my next question.
We can go through that now, or
let's do it. Because I think that'll segue perfectly into talking more about the workshop.
So I have this concept terminology, which I studied graphic design as well while I was in college, and a lot of what graphic design is, the way I learned about it, it's like it's contemplative graphic design. So it really rides a line between fine art and graphic design. Which, you know, I think we could all learn a lot from the graphic design process. There's a lot more writing on it. It's a lot faster. There's a lot of content. It's meditative. Like it's deep. It's a lot of, when you get into like the high end graphic design, it's contemplative. Like it's who is this for and why, and what story is it telling? So some of the some
no it's very it's very true it's very honestly like graphic design and filmmaking are a lot of crossover, honestly, with like what, you know, what story does this font tell, or why, you know, why is this put over here? Like, it's, and anybody who's done any editing work, you're definitely, maybe not, you know, a professional graphic designer, but you've dive in a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And the goal of film, I mean, with our roles as filmmakers, is to align our intent with our impact.
Yeah.
And we get to choose like little things of like, okay, like how loose do we want to be like with our intent? And if we achieve like a little bit of a different impact on our audience, is that okay?
Yeah.
And so, and like, how strict do we want to be? It's like, this is our intent, and this is the impact that, that we're going to have on people. And so, so what I've learned about is like having, you know, a range of choices. So you want to know, is like, is it initial idea? Is this first thought, or is, are we exploring this idea? Is the visual going to be like symbolic or literal or abstract, realistic, hyperreal? Is like, is it lean more into a genre, a style, or a trend, or how do we blend those if we're having all three? So, you know, we're doing like noir in 90s hip hop with the first person drone flying through a bowling alley trend. How do those mesh, and how do we do that? Like, how do we do that visually to make all three of those elements work? And it's like, is it classic? Is it contemporary? Is it futuristic?
And for the audience, if none of those terms made sense to you, go do some YouTube research. Cause I literally, like, as you said, noir, 90s style, like first person going through a bowling alley, I know exactly what that looks like.
Yeah.
And that, no, you're absolutely right. It's a visual language.
Yeah. And well, it's actually not just visual language, which is interesting. It's art language. It's
creative language.
This is literary terminology. Like, we're basing this off books, like, and how books are written, and you know, and it's like, this is how books are formatted and how they're thought about. Right. And so this is what authors are already thinking about and have for thousands of years.
Right.
Now,
it's basic storytelling.
Yeah. It's basic storytelling. And, but this gives you some frame of reference for how you're going to visualize it. If you don't know these things, if someone isn't telling you them, in some way you're making a decision on it, right? You are choosing if this is contemporary or classic. You are like, if a director isn't saying it, then you're going to be the one making the like, and so those are the,
well, that's what's so interesting, is because the director, like, those are the questions that, you know, like, for people that want to be directors, that's the kind of stuff you need to have an answer on.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't have an answer, if you're not getting one, there's also a choice of not to make a choice and to say, like, we're going to use whatever resources we see there.
Right.
You know, we're going to use like anything that's available, and we'll get creative on the spot. And that's certainly a choice. And that's,
well, yeah, because that also lets, you know, the camera department play a little bit more.
Yeah. And it does, you know, it tells you a little bit more about the technical, you know, about the creative, and you know, about the, like, what the managerial is going to be, which are three aspects of cinematography. So, like,
say that again.
It's a creative, technical, and managerial.
Okay.
And I say it in that order specifically. It's creative first, because that's your story, what you need to know. A technical can come is second. And then by managerial, you're overseeing your crew, everyone there. And that there's certainly many methods to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I love that. So yeah, that's fantastic. Like framework for cinematography. So let's dive into crafting the image. Cause I know there's a lot to cover. So I think just for the bite-sized podcast here, we can kind of go into like three tips that people can use from the workshop to improve their cinematography skills.
Great. So the first tip I give, if you come to one of these events, the number one thing you could do to be a better cinematographer is take care of your mental and physical health. And I don't mean that like totally as a joke.
No, it's true.
I have a therapist, you know, and it's like, these films can actually be traumatizing, whether they go really poorly or if they go really well. If they go really well at the end of the show, it ends, you know, there's an end to that, you know, and that can be like, you have to like get back into normal life. And all of the people you just got so close with and you were working with every day, they're all going back to whatever it is they're doing.
Right.
And there's the sort of sadness to it, like that you don't know when you're going to see them again, and you don't know when you're going to have like a great experience like that again. And so no matter what, it's like these little shows and these big shows are going to have an impact on you. So you need to find a way like to make sure that you have the resources that you need to be like the best person, like both on and off set. And also if you are stable, like off set, you'll be more stable on.
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah, by the way, creatives, find some hobbies. Seriously. Yeah. Find some hobbies. I love snowboarding. I love, you know, doing, I mean, this stuff, it's all, you know, but like I know from what I see online, some are like, when you get creative, when you are working creative, it can really take over your life because you say yes to everything because you kind of need to, but like being able to take an off day and like relax yourself and like, you know, again, steady yourself is important.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about that. And I think that's, you know, it goes into our choices too, as a cinematographer but I'm going to go ahead and move on from that.
For sure. If you want to hear more about that. Well, I mean, again, if you want to hear more about any of this stuff, crafting the image, are you putting it online or is it only in person?
No. So it's only in person at the moment. So crafting the image. So I should explain what this is.
Yeah. Let's get some context.
So crafting the image is it's a free workshop that I put on that is at least a 2-day intensive course. So it is for cinematographers who are early to mid-level. We go over things that are creative, technical, and managerial. And what it is it's an intensive. So it's kind of, I don't want to call it a master class because just like, I'm not a master. Like there's plenty.
When master class hires you to do it, you can make it a master class.
Yeah, maybe.
I've been through it and I learned so much and it's really, you're really doing something that is needed in the industry.
Thank you. Yeah. And so crafting the image is focused on building accessibility to arts education. As you know, like I had a very privileged arts education. I was so lucky to have it from a young age. And I know that people are just coming out of college and, you know, or they're in the industry and they just feel like they might be behind on certain arts knowledge. And the fact is that you can find a lot of this knowledge, but it's really like one off and there's no curriculum to it. So very what true. I've done is I've built a curriculum around this to give these intensives for so that I can continue doing them when I'm not working on set. So you have crafting the image, like a creative approach, part one, one, two, and three. So, and then technical approach is one, two, and three, and then a managerial approach. I'm still working on the managerial approach. It goes so deep and there's so little and a lot of information on managerial. you know, I've taken some business classes and I thought that was really helpful. But it's, yeah, you find that lots of people have very different ways of managing a set.
100%.
The goal is to promote DEI in the film industry and help those who have not had the privilege or access to that education earlier in their lives or now to get more information and give them a better chance of success in this industry. It's a great place to network and also it's just a fun time. You know, it's very chill. As much as it is intense and I deliver a lot of information, you know, I'm asking questions, we're engaging and it's a lot of fun.
It seems like you're the perfect person to put the workshop on too, because if you have background in both the teaching and curriculum and work, you know, doing professional work, which is really the marriage of those two sides is what is needed for that.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm grateful, like, you know, like again, to like having the education background and teaching in front of a class, I've learned more and more that that's it's a really important skill set. And I think that, you know, talking in front of a lot of people and sharing your knowledge there's a little bit of a leap of faith, and so it can be a little scary.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, even to this day, like, sometimes,
of course, it never goes away.
it's a great skill set to have, like, as both like as a continuing educator, but also as a cinematographer, because you work with your teams, you have meetings every day, you have to give little tips and advice all the time. It's very personal. So
let's take one kind of starter tip from each of the categories that you've put down, so that, you know, some tacticals so that people listening can have an idea of what's in it.
Yeah. So starter tips. Okay. So I haven't written anything down, but
no, you're good.
I just have so many on a creative level. I think that, like, maybe we've already covered this, but it's really like have an intent, before you set up the frame and before you light. Make sure you know what you want to get out of it before you set up the light, and do not like try to find the intent after you've set it up.
That makes complete sense. Like, you know, if you should be setting up lighting to do something specific, not just to set up lighting.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the real skill of the art, right? You are able to find your intent and have that impact. And that's also how you're going to find your own, like, auteur, if you like to say, this is how I usually do this, and I like this, and this is the impact it seems to have on people, and that's what I want. And then eventually you build on that, and you find other, you know, intents every time. So intents to build off of.
Intents. Yeah. I love that. That's a really, 'cause that is general enough that, like, that can work for any style of film or video that you're making. Like, a successful one needs it's like for in the YouTube universe, having a hook.
Yeah. And the second part of that is not explaining the impact to people, but trusting people when they tell you what the impact is. So you have to listen to them when they say, like, this feels a little more like this and not like this.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, they don't have to be some major artist. Like, they can be some nobody on, you know, I say nobody, like, no one's a nobody. All right. Yeah. But I think that, it can be anyone, because who are we making these films for?
You know,
at the end of the day, it's like, if it's for the director, then, you know, and just the director, like, yeah, you can get the director's opinion on that. If it's, you know, if it's for your mom, like, I don't know, get people who might have a similar opinion to your mom. Or, like, if you're trying to go theatrical, like, it might help to have a screener with people and trust that what they see is right. Or, like, what they're thinking about it is the way to think about it, and trust that maybe it's not working the way that you thought it was working.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially for specific art pieces, is, like, mm-hmm. getting, I think, the testing phase. Like, a lot of people will just send it and, like, okay, this is what it is. But, like, if you're interested in that process, especially because that process is so big at the higher levels of testing, of getting feedback, of, you know, there's more, it's this is why it's a team sport.
yeah. And see, this deserves another hour.
I mean, we're scratching the surface, and we're already an hour in, so I'm not, if you have time, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm here, I'm chilling. I think that
having intent,
understanding like the impact that it's actually having, and your audience isn't, like, you don't always make things for your audience. That's not like the best way to get creative. You know, it's not always just the people, make it for yourself, you know? And that's, like, that's important too. As far as technical is okay. So I am a tech freak.
You have to.
I love a good deep dive on, like, lenses or cameras and understanding like the ins and outs and the flaws. And, you know, like, it's like, I like all the things that ACs like, I just hate screws, you know, bolts and, you know, organizing.
That's the best description of DPA versus ACing I've ever heard. I like all the same stuff without the screws. That's amazing.
I'm glad that rings for you.
Yeah, 100%.
So, what was I going to say? So technical, it's important to, you know as much as you can before you get to set. And that requires research and videos. That is just like a constant, like, keep up to date. But I also think it's so important that to know when you're being duped by marketing, and what is marketing and what is the actual truth and what is your source for it? I think the number one things I can point to about this is dynamic range. What is the dynamic range of this camera? Every single, like every company will give you like a different dynamic range, and they'll say like, oh, this is, you know, the C300 Mark III from Canon is a 16 stop, has a 16 stop dynamic range. And it's like, oh, but then you have the Arri Mini LF, which is a phenomenal camera, like top of the line, but it only has 14 and a half stops of dynamic range. How could that be?
Marketing versus reality.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't, like, and you're not really looking at the picture for what it is. So you need to test. You need to also like get out there, get to like literally go to a rental house. They want you to look at their stuff and play with it. Go build a camera, you know? It's hands-on and seeing it for yourself and then learning like by experience, but from seeing it, by holding these things, like what is actually good and like what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah.
You know, instead of leaning just on YouTube and
I think that also for creating your own education, like that's one of the best things you can possibly do is literally just show up, you know, Google, you know, camera rental houses near me, hit them up and be like, hey, I just want to like shadow for the next week. And because I, you know, guarantee ACs and DPs are going to be in there building stuff and may even be willing to answer questions. Like that is just the best use of time ever.
Absolutely. And that goes for grip and,
100%, all the departments. Yeah.
You know, G&E, and they're, so yeah, I mean, and I can say like, that's advice I was giving early on. That's, you know, advice I got early on and, you know, it's something I followed up on.
I need to do more of that, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. LSI, Lighting Services Inc. in Denver, they actually let me come in for a few days and help them out. I had already like run an equipment cage, like, like after I got,
I did too, by the way. I was about a month or two that I was going to be in there. And I honestly got quite a few jobs out of it for the lower level stuff. But again, just being around.
Yeah. Just being around. And these are the guys who know the guys who are getting work and they're recommending work as well. You're getting tips. They see how good you are with these things. They're thinking about what questions you're asking them. It's not like a high pressure thing, you know?
No, it's very chill. And when you, you know, just go, you know, you can be there for however long you want. Like it's not working there, it's learning. And that's literally, because again, there's professional creatives every single day coming in to pick stuff up, to build, to, you know, whatever it is. And that is that, you know, if you want hands-on, it doesn't get more hands-on than that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and don't be shy because also like they're a business and eventually like you're going to bring them sales.
Yeah.
And they know that like this is how they
are. Or you learn that you're, you know, who are you going to go to when you're working finally with stuff is them. Like that. Exactly. It's a circle. Absolutely.
Exactly. And they'll probably cut you a deal.
Yeah.
Like, if they won't, you should probably try some. most people just give a discount out of
credit. Yeah,
that's fair. I think that's a really excellent way to learn around the technical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also I think reading is just so important for like cinematography especially, and AC, you know, the American Cinematographer's Manual is a phenomenal resource. It's pretty deep, but I think it's something to always have on your bookshelf. And as you learn more, you will understand more of that book. And that's like a really wonderful feeling, like to just say like, where am I at in my career as you
right
through it? It's like, oh, like, you know, first time I read it was college, and I was like, I have no idea. I have no clue.
It's a way to actually catalog progress.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but now I can read through the whole thing and I'm like, oh yeah, I understand like these brands and these people, yeah, and I know vendors, and I know like I can reach out to these people directly if I need to. And, you know, I like have been lucky enough to like coordinate and meet with, the people who wrote it, you know, it's
wow.
And like ASC members are extremely accessible. Like,
yeah,
you can just reach out and Instagram them. You'd be like, hey, you want to grab a coffee? I'm new in town. I'd love to do this thing.
The power of the Instagram DM cannot be understated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really wonderful.
It's how this happened.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I could just go and go.
I love it. All right. So, managerial.
So number one thing that you should always fight for your team is a fair pay for your crew first.
Yeah.
And this can be hard, but before you, if you pay your teams well, they will recognize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will.
We all know that it's not the opening email of like, listen, it's not a great rate, but
yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, oh man, like DP is getting like $2,000 for their
right
camera and themselves for, you know, you know, half a day or something, and then the AC is getting $215 a PA rate.
Right.
Like, well, something's not budget.
Yeah. Like, happy you got your money, but a little spreading the wealth around would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like a strange, it can be a strange dynamic, and we don't have a lot of control over that as a VP, which is also why I have a production company live a little. And it's like, I take that approach every time. It's like, we're not, you know, making a ton of profit on the top on all of these things. It's just pay the crews right and everyone will be happy. But also, you know, as far as being on set and talking with people, transparency and communication, it needs, you know, is so important. Really about, okay, let's see. I got a few different tips that are just flowing through my head. So one is, so you want to be really transparent if there's an issue that could come up. If you talk with your gaffer, talk with your key grip, and it's like, if the director is saying like, oh, you know, I might need a shot from outside of that window up on the third floor. That's your grip's job. And so really like they say they might want it. It's like, you need to go talk to the key grip, like in that moment to see if he has the rigging equipment for it, or if you need to make a compromise. And so it's important to just like
constantly, as close to reading a mind as you can possibly get is working on set.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, and it, like a great key will always be listening like over your shoulder, but they can't do that all the time, you know, and it's like everyone has things to be doing. And so you just like kind of plant that and keep the flow going, try and stay ahead of it as much as possible.
Absolutely. I mean, even a little more on that, like, you know, being in AC when somebody's like, you know, I think we may switch, you know, I may want to get a tighter a shot. You go get the tighter lens ready, even if they don't want to use it. You just heard they might, so you need to be ready for when that happens.
Yeah. And know that, like, again, going off of this, you know, this is a little different topic, but I wanted to say, going back to the ladder versus elevator concept. And it's like, we're not, you know, the guy at the top of the ladder, like shouting down at everybody to hurry up, you know,
right,
and get back to work. And it's like, and work harder. And it's like calling them idiots and whatnot. you know, that, like, that exists.
I was like, I've seen it.
Yeah. It's not great.
It's awkward.
Yeah. You know, morale is so important to a set, and yeah, that just like kills it, you know, it kills the vibe. It kills the energy of, like, you know, who you want to work with. I mean, some people love it. Some people, yes, I don't know that they love it. Some people are, you know, like, some people work with it, and that's like, that's great. But it's
the,
like,
people that ego is more important than the actual work, they love it. But right, other than that,
right, right. But what, but the understatement there, when someone is yelling at you, it's that you are not already, like, trying your best at this job. Like, you are, like, right, you are not already putting your best foot forward.
I know.
And it's like, so you're just, you know, if they're assuming that about you, then that's, that, you know,
sure,
like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that,
yeah,
needs to be dealt with differently. Like, if they think that you're not doing your best at your job, then they should come talk to you, and they need to have that real conversation. And those are hard conversations to, yeah, have. It's like, yeah, I just don't think, I just don't, you know, I see you're working on this. I see you're working hard, and I think I'm going to have to move you into a different role, because this is, you know, this seems to be above your experience, and that's okay.
And
that's,
you have to, and the big, yeah, thing, especially because it will happen, it's happened to me, it's happened to everybody, like, you need to be aware of that and okay. It's not a hit on you as a person. It's just like, yeah, it's true. I'm a little over my head with knowledge, and for the good of the project, it's, you know, that the project over the individual, I think, is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, I'd see managerial, I don't know, like, kindness just goes a long way in this, yeah, industry, and you'll go much further.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I literally just scheduled that as an Instagram post for a couple weeks from now. And always just the don't be a dick, unless you're Nigel Dick, and then you can be the dick because it's your last name and he's the most humble, awesome guy ever.
Yeah. There you go. One exception.
Yeah, exactly. If your actual name is Dick, you can be a dick.
But yeah, you know, and with managerial, I always tell, with the course, when I'm teaching people as far as what film is like and how we should be treating it, it's, and this might be disappointing, but it is no different than a corporate world, and anything, yeah, that is not acceptable in the office is not acceptable on set. You know, I mean,
it's a little more swearing, but other than that, yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, whatever. Like, swearing's no big deal. Like, yeah, it's more chill in these things. Like, yeah, there's probably an electrician smoking weed on the lift over there. That's like, you know,
what else do you do on the GL truck, man? cigarettes is the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, it's is just the general rule of thumb. Like, if you have a problem, talk to your higher up about, yeah, it. If it's, something's wrong, talk to your higher up. If there's something that you see down the line, shoot an email, you know, it's like,
well, there's, you know, there's like small stuff. Like, if you're, and it's, you know, small stuff that could get you fired. Like, if you're a PA and you tell the DP or the director that to change something, you're not a good look.
Not a good look.
Know your role, though. Like, again, so I think exactly what you said, within your department, whoever's like in charge of that, that's who you bring stuff up to, and they will let you know if it's, you know, deserves to be brought up to everybody, or if it's just like, oh no, they'll figure it. Like, it's, yeah, whether you should worry about it or not.
Yeah. And, you know, I on that note, like, if there is an AC who I know is also a DP who's on, or like who's on my set and whatnot, I really don't mind personally, like, asking, like, you know, it's like, do you think there's something up with this? Like, you,
yeah,
know, it's like, and getting that extra tip, and it keeps them excited. It keeps them interested in the game. And that could be a managerial trick and a creative thing to do. And it's like, yeah, like, oh, that's a really good idea. Like, yeah, let's do that. And that,
when you're, you know, in the right place, collaboration is definitely, yeah, part of it. It's not, yeah, just, you know.
Yeah, and when
you see how complicated this is, everybody.
Yeah, and so so yeah, and I, oh man, what else? There's, so I when I look at, so if you look up let's see, it's like crew hierarchy, like film crew hierarchy is like the New Mexico film crew hierarchy specifically that breaks down all of the positions. And you also need to understand, like, you're not the only one wearing a bunch of hats. Like, a lot of times it's your crew.
Yeah.
And it's the people under you who are carrying a lot of extra weight, like, for you. And so you want to, when you look at that list and you say, like, all right, I have a first AC and I don't have a second AC and I don't have a camera PA.
Right.
Like, okay. So it's not their first AC is doing a second AC and a camera PA.
They're going to be, they're never going to stop moving.
Right. Exactly. They're going to do, they're going to be doing all the work and, you know, and that's a lot of work for them.
It's huge.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's one of those, like, respect that, know, like, that, like, when you show gratitude, like, that it's like yeah, you're doing like three jobs right now, and that's hard, and especially if you're a DP and you're like, yeah, I need one AC for three cameras, and it's like, I hopefully that happens.
Oh God.
Thankfully I haven't had to do that yet. But
this is actually good, exactly what you said, and I just want to, like, really reiterate for the audience, Googling film crew hierarchy will really help with knowing your way around, just, you know, when you show up, knowing something about all this.
Yeah And it's and knowing those positions, and you can look at the different roles and responsibilities,
go down all the rabbit holes
of those positions, and it's a beautiful it's a great way to start, great way to get to know. And also, like, if you really want to get to know it, you can also just call someone who is in that position, or shoot, like, that's something you can do a cold email on. Just like, yeah, I just want to ask a few questions about your job.
Yeah. What is the role? Like, what are the, I had to learn a ton of that, of, like, literally first AC versus second AC is completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, but something that's accessible. One thing I love, and what you could, whatever, like, everyone talks about what they love the film industry. Don't you love it? Isn't it great? And it's like, yeah. But what I really, like, love is how open people can be with information when you ask for it.
That's very true.
Yeah, I would say the most successful people are the people who answer questions and who also ask questions when they need to. And there's no hesitation about it. It's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Can you show me how to do that?
Yeah.
And that's totally normal.
Think about, you know, all of this is based around making the day. All this is based around the team effort that goes into getting the shots and the story done that we're trying to get done in the day. If you don't ask and somebody has to redo the work because you didn't know what you were doing, versus the 5 minutes it takes for somebody to answer that and teach you the correct way, that's just a way better place. So never be afraid to ask questions, no matter what level. That's a huge piece of advice there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see. And as far as asking questions, I'm gonna veer away from that.
I love that. That was a very deep dive into, and obviously this is, you know, 20, 30 minutes on a 3-day intensive workshop. So, you know, definitely go check it out if you can find JD's next Crafting the Image. We'll link it to where. By the way, did you know your website is down right now?
Oh, no, I did not. Oh, no.
While you look that up, what has been for you a memorable experience or project that really had an impact on your career?
I think that, you know, the one we just finished, this feature film, which is my first feature film. As
congrats.
Director. Yeah, thanks.
It's huge.
Yeah, as director and DP, which is like,
that's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot of work. But it was so impactful and wonderful because I had, like, when I asked for the help on it, when I was hiring the crews, it was like everyone that I wanted was available. And, you know, and this had
that's
been
awesome.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been years of like planning and getting to a point where we could actually film, like, the final part of it in October. And it was the last, it's just 5 days. So but we needed, like, I wanted everyone there. And then I wanted my post-production team there. Ian Marks, we had this Ben Messelbeck do a composer come on.
Nice.
It's really wonderful. We had been talking for months before that. We got color from Company 3. Emily Bailey over there did a wonderful job. But really having everyone come together and put their best foot forward and lean in and you know, I felt like extremely grateful to that help and their expertise, and to not feel like, you know, at any point like I was carrying like there anyone on my
sounds like you got I mean you understood the concept of hire people that are, you know, higher at your level or higher, because it's exactly the formula for going well and being a good experience.
Yeah, exactly. And that's and you have to know what you don't know too.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah. Did you say you shot a feature in 5 days?
So it was 13 days total.
Okay.
Holy
shit.
Yeah. And it was over the last three years, and we had to still use.
Oh, okay. It was over time. I got you.
Yeah.
It wasn't all together.
Yeah.
By the way, how you do it when when you're trying to piece it together, however you can. And that's why it takes, especially for, you know, if you're not dealing with the, you know, millions of dollars budget for stuff, you can make a feature on weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the film comes out in May on PBS.
Hell yeah.
So May 1st, which is exciting. It'll be...
This is perfect timing for this podcast, then.
Yeah. So it'll be in Southern California first for the first part of May, for the first 2 weeks, and then it'll be nationally after that. So...
Wait. Okay, so PBS, on PBS stations?
Yes, yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
So, yeah.
You gotta send me the link to where that will be, or, like, how people can find that once it actually...
Yeah. PBS On Demand.
Yeah, perfect. It's an app. Hey, listen, streaming's king. I realized recently how long it's been since I've been to a movie theater. And not by any... I've just been busy or broke or whatever, and it's just so depressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely gotta get out there and slacking myself. You know?
So what was, what's the name of the movie?
Snapshots of Confinement.
And what's our little, the elevator pitch on it?
Sure. Yeah, it's it's a documentary about Japanese Americans' photo albums that were created during World War II.
Wow.
And their significance today. There's an effort out there to preserve them, and it's, you know, it's around themes of generational trauma and preservation. And
nice. So,
yeah, it's really wonderful stories, really like incredible like participants and subjects who were willing to talk on camera, and it was just felt great to have
talking about having a clear communication and like a good working set when people are diving that deep into their personal stuff and maybe some trauma and all that. Like, you really need a empathetic set for that, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like, you know, we were filming with 96 and 97 year olds, and
wow.
They were all very spriteful. So
That's great.
Didn't feel that way.
You're about to die. How was your life?
No.
That's awesome. That's what we all hope for, is a nice long life that you're still there with it mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're just wonderful and really gave as much information as they could. And it was just awesome. Yeah.
That's but, super cool.
Yeah. As far as the set workflow, it was like, all right, try to just be set up before anyone shows up, and then we'll get it done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So with, you know, that's kind of storytelling, and, you know, we've gone a little bit into technical. How do you see the future of cinematography evolving, specifically with technology, with, you know, obviously we have kind of the giants of camera all fighting for the new stuff, but who are you impressed by, and where do you see things going?
As far as tech and brands and like all of it? Okay. That's a good question. Let's see. I don't want to like knock anyone. That's not.
Yeah, I would say maybe like, you know, who are your go-tos, your favorites that, you know, you just had really good experiences with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm naturally biased because Aerie has been really kind to me. Like they let us do our Crafting the Image workshop there, where we also.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, and we taught a.
That's the place to do it.
Yeah, and we also taught the Crafting the Image. Like, so we taught virtual production while we were there as well on their volume, which was really just awesome. And they've just been forward and upfront about everything. But also, you know, I own an Aerie camera, which I think, you know, the biggest thing that I love is that, you know, Aerie has had this true information first, like really forward information. There's a science behind all of their decisions. Of course they have their own marketing, like every, you know, business does, like that you have to, like, there might be some things that are hidden that are purely business decisions, and, you know, that's well within their right. But when they put out, you know, white papers and on the technical, like textures and dynamic range and exposure control and whatnot, it's like, those are extremely like valuable little pieces of paper for a DP to see and understand. And they're not beating around the bush. They're saying like, this is what our camera is best at. These are the settings that we would prefer it to be. And this is why we limit it, because we know that we can guarantee like the best color and the best color rendition and the best processes and the long-term value of your products by keeping these settings at this.
And just by telling the truth. Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, yeah, that's all I want. It doesn't mean that they're the best for every job.
Right. No, but being upfront with that information is just like,
yeah.
Because, you know, if you get marketing that's like, it says it does this and then it doesn't, you're like, what the, okay.
Yeah, so that's definitely my bias, of course. And then, but I don't know, I'm excited for all the companies. We're in this moment right now. And I say it with, like, I'm also like really into lighting. I was doing gaffing for a while as well. And it's, you know, on the lighting side, like, Aperture has an incredible team. Tim King, like ASC, is now their principal engineer, who is over at Quasar, and those Quasars like still kick ass. And so it's just like they got like, and they pulled in Mitch from ProLight, and ProLight has been, they just put out that astounding product. And so now that we're going to see that in the Aperture lineup, that's exciting. I mean, but
Aperture is definitely where it's at for lights.
Yeah. I mean, and
they even have social media presence. Like, they're really doing a lot. They're awesome.
Yeah. Their marketing is crazy. it's wild.
Which is great. Yeah. It's like liquid death. Like, you got to stand out somehow.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But you know, I mean, what I'm most excited about is that everyone is trying to get rid of their tungsten units and I can buy them up because they're still awesome, man. Like, yeah, you just, there's nothing else like it. Like, man.
You're like, give me it.
Yeah, like, you don't want that? Like, okay.
Yeah. I'll take
that from you. Like, yeah. No,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing though. It's like these LED lights and, you know, everything's exciting and it's changing, but it's year over year, you know, and, you know, DPs gaffers have been having to change out their LED units every other year, you know.
Oh my God, really? It's like, just yeah, it's not very long.
You get 2 years and then it stops renting because there's a new product out.
Right.
You know, like it's, and
you just got used to that.
Want that on the truck. People want the latest product on the truck. And, you know, there are some really like great form factors and great lights out there, but I also think that there's a foundation of lighting missing in young filmmakers today that are using things like tungsten and direct lights. Like, that's tungsten is so, like, it's such a great way to learn exactly like how, like, the limitations of a light, but also like how just like how well they had the formula down for, 70 years.
And right.
It was like, great, light goes straight in this direction. It's a Fresnel. And it's like, and here's how we do that. And then we put that through a frame. And there is no, like, and if you dim it, like, you can turn down the Kelvin output on it.
Right.
But I can guarantee you that when you set that light up 10 feet away from this thing, you will, like, no matter which unit it is, like, no matter where you found it, it's going to light to this particular stop.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to do the same thing.
5.6.
Yeah.
And that is your system right there. And that is something that, like, Aperture is wonderful. It has all these dials and things, like, and, you know, I mean, even Arri just put out a new, LED Fresnel. And it's, like, it's wonderful, but you're not going to learn, like, exactly what that light can do at 50%. You're just going to be like, oh, it's too bright, I'm just going to go dim that real quick. And so you can be more intentional if you have those foundations.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Again, it's like the knowing the rules so that you can, break the rules or go with the rules. Like, I feel like the more dials available, the more you can screw it up.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, I compare these things to having a car, and this is also why I lean toward Arri, like Arri versus Red, which they're both like beautiful products. They're wonderful. They do great work. And, but Red has, Arri is, it's actually really simple. Like, you're going to be like, oh, I want to like handle an Alexa, and you pick it up and you go through the menu and it's like, oh, like, it's like, you got NDs, ISO, and
all the basics, all the stuff that we've been doing since film school.
It's so different than any other camera. Well, okay, I guess I played with that now. Like, and then you go to Red and it's like, all right, you have all of these like crazy compression ratios and these different frame rates. And if you're in this frame rate, you can only record at this aspect ratio. And, and it's like, that's really cool. I just need something that shoots 16:9 and, so it's.
What I always like to say, it feels like, Red is like the celebrity, and Arri, it has, is the workhorse behind the scenes that like the majority of Oscar projects are shot on.
Yeah.
Like, very, very rare to find a high level. I mean, again, it's all preference, but like Red is not attached to like, the Oscar noms.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. And that's kind of it with like, it's not like, not even just Red though. It's a lot of people are learning on DSLRs.
Oh yeah. I run my whole business off of a A7 III.
You're right. A7 III.
It works great for what I need.
It really does. It really does. And that menu system.
Oh,
like, it's like, what do you have? Like 12 pages that you
Okay. Really? All I want. Camera manufacturers, all I want is the low light and capabilities and stuff, like, slow-mo, all that stuff that the A7 III has with the fucking menu system of Blackmagic, please.
Yeah.
Blackmagic is so good on menu systems.
Yeah. Sony's really funny. I think the thing that all of these companies could use is a simple button, like just go to like
the advanced. Yes, dude.
And it's just ISO, aperture, and shutter speed. And that's
oh my god, 100%.
Like, just that's all I need. That's
get me
all
shooting.
I need.
Just get me shooting. Yeah, because the autofocus is so good now. I haven't touched the focus dial in like a year, which is insane. I mean, sometimes I do when you need, but like if they can make this the menu system as simple as the autofocus thing, then we're really in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just overdoing it. They're overthinking it. And
fucking 17 pages for of menu systems for just camera settings.
Yeah, yeah. And you look at like a $10,000 Leica M11, and you're it's like it's just those three settings,
Right. What I do is like the specific scenario. I would never dream of touching 75% of that stuff in the pages. Like sometimes, like I don't know, it's unneeded. You don't like cool. You know what's good, put it in, like we trust you.
Yeah, exactly. And for photography especially, it's just I think that's a huge part of why people just like film cameras in general. They're like actually quite easy, and so
easy is good with how much other stuff you have to worry about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Who are what are some of your favorite, I'm gonna do top three maybe films and I don't know about top three films is hard. Let's go top three filmmakers who have influenced your work, who you look up to, who are really doing some cool stuff.
Oh boy, that is a good question.
Films is impossible. I'll go filmmakers. It's like body of work.
yeah, that's fine. Let's see. You know, so what I like to do is like I think that I'm more of like a, you know, it's like I like the knowledge of jazz music, like, you know, in film and like, but I do like pop, you know, I want to make films that the general world will like. And so, what's his name? Van Hoven, who did RoboCop and he also did Starship Troopers, which is not as great, but
yeah, but like, I mean, cult classic, you know.
I actually love like the satire of Starship Troopers.
It's so good. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And all those effects really hold up.
Like, They're not bad.
Digital effects. I'm shocked. Story-wise, like, whatever.
Yeah. But it's the ultimate camp. It's
great. But I love
that. Giving the thumbs up after killing the bug. Like, it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. And RoboCop, it's just so funny. Man, I love the craft of it and, you know, the satire behind it. And if it was like, it was before its time and it felt like it stepped into something that was really wonderful. And he's, you know, a kind of director who doesn't make films the same way, or he doesn't make it, he makes them the way that he wants to. And I think that's really like important and special. And
huge.
That, you know,
gotta have your voice on it.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta hold on to your integrity, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Who else? I love Kubrick, of course. Like that's a given. And let's see. Who have I enjoyed recently? Really. Putting me through choosing.
No, you're good. I'll even add one in. So I have kind of a hands down favorite, which just because of, again, style and just the cleanliness of it. Edgar Wright is.
Oh, Edgar Wright.
Master.
Yeah. Yeah. Edgar Wright was wonderful. Let me see. What's his hole? I'm going to look up his hole here. Yeah, because he just did. No, he hadn't done anything recently, right? No.
Yeah, he did. So I'm trying to
think. Last Night in Soho, right?
Last Night in Soho is the most recent one. Gotcha. For me, like the Cornetto trilogy are untouchable. Mm-hmm. And you know, Scott Pilgrim was my favorite film for quite a while, and then he just keeps coming out with, you know, more awesome stuff. But just
his
style is so apparent. And honestly, it's funny, I was sad that he had to step down from Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. But if they had made him not be Edgar Wright with his way of doing things on that, it would have not, you know. I get it.
If
Edgar Wright does not ever make a non-Edgar Wright movie, which I love.
if everything were Scott Pilgrim versus the World, though, I think that is a pretty perfect movie.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's so, like, just every, even just like the scene where he's peeing and the pee meter goes down and then disappears. Like, it's just all the small shit that's like, it feels like a comic. It is the most feeling like a comic book movie I've ever seen from a comic book. And it's just, it completely did it justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. I was thinking Gareth Edwards actually is.
Oh, okay. I'm sure I know his work in some of it.
Yeah, he just did The Creator. Which, like, you know, it's the approach that is really fascinating to me, and I feel like maybe their marketing worked on me, but it's like Oren Safer. So Oren Safer is the DP, him and Greg Fraser shot Batman and Dune, and, you know, it's like
I need to see Dune too. I've heard everybody just freaking out over it.
Yeah, but I think that having a director's trust to have two DPs on set is like incredible, and allowing that collaboration to happen. Also having like not looking at it like, oh, we need the best of the best for everything, but saying like, what is actually, what do we need to make this look like a $250 million budget?
Yeah.
And you know, they use the smaller cameras, like, and smaller gimbals. And it's true. Like it really like changed. I'd say really like created a different way of looking at these large Hollywood films that I think is really valuable. But also I think it inspired a lot of younger filmmakers, and to do that with a film is really powerful.
An accomplishment.
But he also like, you know, he was the camera operator on all of his own shots. Like, so he,
that's the way I do it.
He's back there, like actually choosing his frames. And so he's working in collaboration with the DPs. And I, you know, and that's something that with this hierarchy of director over DP, I don't really see it that way. I see it more as a partnership, because your goal as a DP is to support the director's like visual image, but also you're filling in gaps that you see where they don't have the time. And really that's everyone's role, right? It's like, if you're a wardrobe person, you don't stop at the, you know, stop thinking about it at whatever the director tells you. You continue on that and you build off that.
Yeah.
And so that's like, but as a DP, it's like, you're the person, you know, you're the bottleneck. It's like between that part of production and the crew, you know? And
yeah.
That's like, you know, you're also
kind of essential.
Yeah. And he's got his own side to do. Which is more of like the art department, production design, and all of that. And then you have your side, and you know, it's still a team thing. These aren't like separate, like you don't communicate with them, period. Like you would definitely do. But yeah, I think that having the director step in and build a bridge over those lines and hear that, you know, he's someone who's really deliberate with his filmmaking, and, you know, it's like those, like, that's like just a really beautiful thing and an amazing thing to see in the film industry. And I also think that with Monsters, it was him who he shot and directed it alone, I believe, and that was like just his passion project that got him onto the scene.
So, yeah, that's epic.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So we'll wrap it up with some kind of quick fire questions here.
Yeah, good.
What is one of your favorite quotes and why?
Oh man, I'm not a quote person.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm full of,
I'll change it up. What's one of your favorite movie quotes and why?
Oh God, you just made it worse. Movie quotes. No, I think I'll just go with favorite quotes.
Okay.
I think quotes. Quotes.
If you can't think of one, it's okay.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I just have like more, like when I think of quotes, I think of like what mentors have told me in the past. And so I think one that I really stick to that I love, let's see, under promise, over deliver. I just really, I love that. I think it's always true. Like it's a really safe space to put yourself in, but it also like, it makes everybody happy at the end of the day. And so we really want to, like, no matter what it is, it's like, yeah, like it's okay to set up some boundaries and then expand on them, but it's not okay to like, you know, set goals and not meet them. You know?
I think generally that quote is, that saying is just what it takes to be successful in anything.
Mm-hmm.
Under promising and over delivering, so that, you know, it always makes you look the best possible way you can look, and, you know, you'll be able to figure out your level of talent, your level of expertise, all that stuff when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what else?
That's fine. Just one that I think that's great.
the one fire question?
Yeah, no, I love it. Oh yeah, other questions. Yeah, yeah. All right, this may be harder. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. All right.
You may have thought of it, though, because of the workshop. So what's the title of your memoir?
Title of my memoir. I had not thought about that. Let's see. Title of my memoir is... oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking like, all that came to me was good luck, you know? No, it's
so you want to make it in the film industry. Good yeah. luck.
No, I think someone once told me that I'm a really what was the word? It's like not like targeted. I am like a I deliberate person.
Yeah.
You really like, you know, make decisions like if like as deliberately as possible.
Yeah, it's, I mean, from what I've known from you, it definitely seems that way, which is great. A great way to do it.
Yeah. You know, you try. You can't control everything, and it's just like.
No, honestly, that's funny because I think everything we've talked about, like, it comes back to deliberate decisions. Like you know, there's a reason behind everything, and. That's a really good just summary of like how your brain works.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I like that. The deliberate decisions is
there. Really, you go.
That's my memoir.
And then obviously we talked about, you know, how this industry can kind of take up your whole life. What is a hobby that kind of helps you relax and takes you away from it all?
I play pool. So I joined my first pool league this year.
Nice.
I didn't think I ever had the time for it. And, you know.
You make now, the time.
Yeah, well, now that there's no work. Like.
it's fun and depressing.
There's always something to do, you know. It's like, even if you pay off immediately, there's always something to find to get out there and do. And
you so, have to fill your time. Hey, listen, that could be your next documentary is a yeah. pool thing.
Yeah, my wife insisted that I join this league to make me a happier person, especially if someone works from home. So,
trust me, I know me. As much editing work as I have, I'm always home. And I picked up ice hockey about a year and a half ago.
Nice.
And it's obviously non-contact, but it's so fun.
Yeah.
But gets you out of the house, gets you doing something.
Sure. Yeah. I'm like really good at pool, so if there's
there you go
out there, like anytime.
Hey, listen, the best man for my wedding is actually they beat everybody else in Colorado when they went to a tournament in Vegas.
Oh,
with their league. So you guys should definitely play together. That'd be fun.
Yeah. That sounds great. I'd love that.
Finally, let me kind of roll out the red carpet for you. Let everybody know what you got going on in your life.
Okay. Well, I don't think I ever fully got through my whole life story. My goodness. Like, yeah. A couple of years ago, we moved out to New York, and I'm building my production company, Live a Little. Video production company. You can look it up, LIVALITTLE.com. And Crafting the Image is a workshop that is it's going to be like a subsidiary of Live a Little. We're going to have that happening at the, in July, again, here in New York. And then we're currently looking for partners and other people to help us collaborate so we can bring it to more cities. And then of course I am a freelance DP. That is, my number one, that's the thing I do. Everything else is, you know, my side projects that keep me busy, but also help keep my friends busy and helps people find work. And, you know, I think, all of it goes hand in hand, and I like it that way. And so, if you're a director,
you don't want to hire JD after this podcast, you're insane.
Yeah.
You know yourself.
Yes, you're
inside
insane.
And out, man.
Insane. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'd love to work with, you know, more creative agencies or producers, directors. Don't hesitate to reach out. Would love to collaborate. I have to update my reel and things, and
always,
always. But you know, I'm excited to say that we have plenty of great work to show that hasn't been released yet. And
until then, your Instagram is pretty much a you know, just a good showing of what you're able to do.
Oh yeah, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, and I guess you can link that, but Jay, you can tell us DP. You know, DM me. Doesn't matter. I'm pretty much.
Is that your main one, or are you on any other socials?
No, that's my main one. Cool. Just that one for now.
Nice and simple. I love it.
Yep.
Well, hey, this has been an absolute blast, and I've even picked up a couple tips, which I figured I would talking to you, and that's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Noah. This has been awesome.
Oh yeah. For everybody watching and listening, I will see you next time.
All right. Take care.